Episode 25, Beyond Athletic.
Plan your progress. Don't randomly do it. Plan your progress. It's a game plan of life. It's a game plan of professional standards that you have to live by to have success. You can't randomly do it. I'm just telling you. Design your plan and follow through.
Gumbo! You might be smarter. Your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are beyond athletic. What's up, everyone? Today's an expert game plan session. We've got on a USPTA, which is the United States Professional Tennis Association, Master Professional Inductee Tennis Teacher Hall of Fame, and 20 years as a USPTA Tester of the Year, Mike Van Zutphen. And he's currently in Huntington Beach, California. I'm very jealous of that because Huntington Beach is an incredible place. But what we're going to get into today is a bunch of stuff, and this is part one of two parts, because Mike is just got so much information and so much experience that I figured we have got to get him on two times and let's break up everything. So in today's episode, we get into really specialized training and how important structure and having a relationship with your coach or your player, if you are a coach, how important those things are. And we'll also discuss three different concepts involved with getting better through your trainings, the mechanical, cognitive, and emotional training that's really important. And Mike dives into how important structure of not only your training, but your life as an athlete, how important that is to your success. For sure, get into the statistics, what's happening at this time, how can you have the advantage over other athletes? And this spans across many different sports. So in this first part, we also talk about functional intelligence, which Mike describes as the ability to function under pressure in the defined environment, making great decisions based on a tactical way to play and the statistical percentages, and why it's so important that athletes have this. So I hope you're going to enjoy it. Without any further ado, I bring you Mike Van Zutphen. Hey everybody, Ryan J. Owens here. Today is a game plan session where we give athletes knowledge to optimize their lives and their sports. Today's featured guest, Mr. Mike Van Zutphen. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Mike, are you ready to game plan?
Sure. Ready to game plan.
So I'm honored to bring on listeners such an accomplished and valuable guest, because recently, we had an episode with a young tennis pro, Dino Martan of Croatia, and we have some others coming up here. Basan Biedas and Antoine Beneteau, his brother is actually one of the top professionals in the ATP now. But this interview is more about you, Mike. So who is Mike? And to give people a little bit of background, you're an USPTA master professional. You, if I'm not incorrect, you coach the ATP number 12, Pat Dupre.
Yep.
And you trained two NCAA champions. You trained a Wimbledon junior champion. You're an inductee of the Tennis Teacher Hall of Fame. You wrote 5 books on tennis, which I'm going to love to get into a little bit into this interview also. And for 20 years, you've been a USPTA tester. And you were a tester of the year, right?
For 20 years.
Every year for 20 years you've been...
Yes.
That's incredible. Wow, congratulations on that. Setting a standard, huh?
Well, I believe in the educational format, and I just think people are going to enjoy, if they have a lesson or something. Obviously, you'll see coaches that have the training and background tend to give a better class, and the person learns faster. Nobody wants to learn slow.
I agree. So, listen, I gave everybody just a little bit about you, and why don't you just take it away for a moment, share a bit more about your background personally, and then we'll expand upon your craft.
It took me 10 years to get my classification of master professional, and I went through strenuous requirements, and in our country, I was the recipient of the Educational Merit Award, which means the guy who studied the most. I've done a lot of work with our country in regards to all levels of players, like from beginner kids to all the way to advanced level students who've come to me to develop their game, or actually a game plan in their personal development. For example, in our country, I helped design the curriculum guide for all the grade schools in our country, and I worked 7 years with a Dr. Pangrazi out of Arizona State University who writes that guide. So from the very beginning level, those teachers who have to do a curriculum guide for kids to professional athletes that have come to me from all over the world, and then worked with them. I worked with this guy, Pat Dupre. I played world team tennis with him. I was hired as a doubles specialist at that time. My best win professionally was I beat a guy 11th in the world. His name was Andrew Patterson from South Africa. My consistency level and my lack of structure is really why professionally I didn't make it at the time. And then financially, the money in tennis wasn't very big like it is now. And I think this is a shortcoming of a lot of professional players who go out and say, well, gee, I love the idea of playing professional tennis, and my organizational skills and managing my life and my business, really, which is playing tennis, is not that good. And that's why they tend to fail. I personally put together one of my books is a training manual for players. And what happens is any of the players that I train, they get this manual, which is a guide. It's an organizational guide, which helps them understand and detect flaws or weaknesses in their performance. So my background educationally, I've been through all the things over 30 years of doing this. That the challenges we face, both, in terms of skill development, specificity of training, overload, work schedule, periodization for the athletes, that's where you learn through the years of hard knocks, because you had athletes perform well and athletes that didn't, and you want to know why. So really that's a little bit about my background. I coached collegiately at a junior college. I had my own TV show. I owned a tennis magazine called Sun Tennis. At one time, I ran 15 resorts in Arizona, two five-star properties, and, I was actively in the tennis business. And right now, I still own the second largest community tennis association in the United States called the Arizona Tennis Association, which is like league play for beginners, intermediates, advanced, and we train juniors and adults all across the state, and that program is still running now. So that's a little bit about it. So I don't know what else I need to say.
I love it. I mean, what else is there to say? There's so much there, and we're definitely going to dive into some of the things you've learned along the way in your journey here. But before we do, let's set the mood. And let's just talk about, or just give us a personal quote or belief that you live by.
Well, I mean, if I said, what would be a quote? I mean, that's sort of a hard thing. I think if you live your life to a standard and you give everything you've got, you can't feel bad about whatever happens with the outcome. I think people, sometimes don't always or aren't honest with themselves about where they're standing and where they need to go. So again, You know, it's I don't really, I mean, I live by that standard. I mean, in tennis, I mean, I have a quote that I always ask players this question. I said, you know, the ball that travels over the net has a future. You know, so again, I don't want people to be pigeonholed, but I do want them to understand that, you know, training the tennis player at every level, you know, they want to be successful. Nobody wants to go out and play the game and let's be bad.
Yeah. You know?
So let's do this badly, you know.
Yeah.
And I think also that athletes and recreational players sometimes don't know the difference between someone just feeding balls, and that's what we call a corrective lesson on the test, which is, you know, hey, watch your feet, try to get closer to the ball, watch the ball, follow through. Those are corrective things. Those aren't mechanical changes. So we do two things. There's really three basic formats for athletes, coaches, and players to learn. There's a mechanical proficiency characteristic. There's the cognitive skills, the intellectual skills. You know, some people call it IT, you know, intellectual tennis, or you know, like that. And then there's the emotional state, which we really a behavioral type lesson. Okay, for example, if I gave you one serve to put it in the box, would you hit it as hard as you could, or would you just put it in the box? You see, that's a behavioral lesson. That's a lesson that some people don't understand, that, you know, it changes the way they act on the court so that the percentage of first serves is higher. So anyway, but yeah, that's sort of what I would say is how my philosophy is in terms of training. I want people to be successful, so I work hard as I can to facilitate that. That's all.
Yeah, and I mean, that's obvious considering what you've accomplished so far. And what, if I could ask, what do you think sets you apart from others in terms of, like, what are the advantages of, for instance, having a coach like you as opposed to others in terms of your methodology and what you focus on? Because you have had these, you know, All-Americans and top pros. So what do you think that you're doing differently that's important?
Well, first off, I think that you have to have a relationship with the player. But again, if you said, okay, so I took the second part of my career and I said, okay, I'm not performing high enough to make a living at tennis and live the lifestyle I'd like to live. So I'm going to be a teacher. So I made that decision. So what did I do? I went and worked with Rod Laver. I went and worked with Roy Emerson. I went and worked with Dennis Vandermeer. I went and worked with Vic Braden. Coaches in the industry, you know, that I would consider, you know, really phenomenal teachers. And what I tried to do is gather that information from those coaches that I felt was relevant for me, and go back to adding those skills or those techniques to my style of teaching. So why do players professionally come to me a lot is, one, I would say I design a specific training regimen and structure that actually categorizes and gives priorities to weaknesses. It is geared individually. Like, for example, let's say it's customized to that person. It's not, you just can't cookie cutter everything. You know, you can't say, okay, this person learns this way, and you know, so we cookie cutter everything and say, well, we'll just put them into this academy, and we hope that they turn out right. Mm-hmm. That's silly. That everybody's different. We manage their work schedule very well. We go through progression type teaching so that someone in the learning curve is going to get it faster. That's what I always ask athletes. I said, hey, do you want to learn fast or slow? They go, well, fast. You know, it's like, what? Why would you ask me that? Well, you know, your performance doesn't look like you want to learn fast. You know, I do a periodization schedule, and what happens is you know, I ask people to answer specific questions, especially in my training manual, because what happens is I want to know what their preparation was pre-competition, what happened during competition, and did they follow the stages so that that we can find out and detect why performance didn't go the way it did, they wanted it to, or maybe it did go really well. Let's identify those things. So if I said in a nutshell, I'm the best Mercedes mechanic in the industry right now. There's probably maybe five other coaches who understand that, or six other guys in the country. Mm-hmm. But mechanically, I'm the guy who can fix a skill in, you know, just a short time, and then the process is polishing the skill, you know, so that the athlete owns it. Mm-hmm. That's why people come to me.
Yeah, I like that, polishing the skill so that the athlete owns it. And I want to dive a little bit more into this structure that you're talking about and just give some examples of how athletes, for instance, could structure their daily lives a little bit better.
Well, it's pretty simple. I think what happens is you have to have a base rating. You know what? Everybody goes, okay, you know, this is my tool in the box. Here's where I'm at, you know, mechanically. I can serve 110 down the tee. I can serve wide. I can hit a wide serve, a bender, or a slice serve, or a kick serve, or I can volley to this corner. I don't run to net, and I'm really good at the back. I don't transition well, or I do transition well. Athletes don't identify where they're at, so how can you know where you're going? So to me, what takes place is structure is a way. First, when an athlete comes to me, I ask a bunch of questions. They fill out a form that says, how is my forehand cross court short angle? How is my forehand cross court deep? How is my forehand down the line? Those would be typical questions they would have to ask. And then what happens is, then I really want to know if they think that skill, because everybody has a perception. Look, you have a perception that your skill is this, and they tell you that. Oh, man, I'm really good at this. Okay. Then what happens is, you know, you chart a match that they play. You go out and chart a match. I'll give you an example here. I just had the 60th ranked junior in the world here with me. Okay. So what happens is he says, yeah, man, everybody's picking on my backhand. Oh, my gosh, it's so good. You know, it's like, but I, you know what? It's a problem because I never, ever, it's just like they work my backhand wing, and I'm a one-handed backhand player. And I go, okay, let's chart a match. So I had him play the number one guy from SC. And I said, hey, Alex, you know, like, you know, what do you think happened here? He says, yeah, my backhand was weak again. Well, I charted the match. He missed 35 forehands, okay, to 5 backhands. 35 to 5. Okay, now, what's going on? I mean, that's a perception. My backhand is, you know, it's breaking down, but in reality, I mean, forehand was the mistake. Now, that could be position or shot selection, or that could be overplaying a skill, you know, but his backhand didn't break down. His forehand did. So where do you think I'm going to spend the time, you know, educationally with that player so that that doesn't happen? And what type of ball came to him, what height, what spin, what speed, was the one that plagued him the most? So, and he was unaware of that. But his perception when he filled out the form was like, hey, this is where I, you know, this is really a good skill for me, man. I'm really good. But in reality, that athlete can't benchmark themselves because they believe really that, you know, this tool in the box is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge athletes have. They can't identify where they're at. Now there's no base rating. There's no base evaluation. Now what happens is, now I want to go somewhere. Okay, so what things do I really need to perfect, and what is causing me to lose? Well, it's easy to see once you chart matches and then you get a period of, you know, 10 or 8 matches under your belt, you're going to see the patterns of where the mistakes are happening and why the athlete isn't performing specifically. So then you can design a specific training so that it attacks the weakness that's actually occurring in the match. It's not random. People do random training. I'm not that guy. It would bore me to death if I had to just say, okay, let's just go out and hit 50 forehands down the line. Okay, why? Let's tell the athlete why he needs the skill. Now let's work on the skill based on a performance characteristic. Mm-hmm. Now we have a chance of eliminating that skill to be a weakness, and now it becomes a strength. So, again, I think the challenge lies in the structure, because there's no way of physically putting together the specificity of training for that individual so that we understand why he's not performing and what progressions and what daily routines, like you talked about, does he do to fix the problem. And that's the structure. That's what structure really is. It's designing so that this athlete optimizes his chances.
Yeah. I love this, and it's something that's really important, because a lot in my career, I mean, I've seen, and my takeaway from what you're talking about here is that athletes really, and there's a lot of athletes around the world who just don't have access to people like you, Mike, and you know that, because a lot in the U.S. don't have. You named off how many people usually are in the state, or right now are in the States, kind of on the same level as you. But for players, for athletes, I think it's so important that we just realize we've got to be able to assess what reality is and not, like you said, what our perception is. And so if we can take the structure where we can say, all right, I'm going to look at this video, I'm going to chart, like, for instance, what's really going on, and then I'm going to not focus on what I think is happening, but I'm going to actually attack what's happening. And so what's most important is that we build up our weaknesses, because that's what people are going to attack the most. And whatever we think is strong sometimes, I do agree with you. There's been times I've been in a match. I play volleyball. There's been times I've been in a match, and I'm like, man, I cannot be stopped here, you know? But then when I look back at the match, I go, well, you know what? They did a really good job of taking this other thing away from me, that if I actually would have gone there, I could have been much more effective. And although I had great attacks this direction where I felt amazing, actually they played up more of those balls than I thought they did. And so they actually had me in their game, and I wasn't playing my game. So, you know, dissecting there. So thanks for sharing that. I mean, those are good lessons, takeaways for players. I mean, video is a huge part of this, I'm going to guess, right?
Well, yeah, I do videotape the players in matches, but only as a reference to movement and the body language, the body balance. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I invented this thing where I put a cup on the top of a hat, okay? And the cup is big enough just to barely fit a tennis ball, okay?
Yeah.
So it sits there about halfway down. So I have an athlete run and hit a ball. Okay, and I said to him, I said, okay, so you got to run and hit this ball, so your head's got to be still, and your shoulders have to be calm. So guess what? I want you to go run and hit the ball, but I don't want you to let the ball that I put on the top of the hat, you know, on your head, fall off. If it falls off, your head's leaning back or not staying stable or calm during the striking of the ball. That's a corrective. That's like, okay, you can say to an athlete, okay, keep your head still when you strike the shot, like Federer, okay? Well, then he goes, yeah, well, I'm doing that. Well, if he feels it kinesthetically, because we actually learn visually, kinesthetically, and auditorily. So if you attack those areas as a teacher based on that individual, the player's going to learn faster. I'll give you an example. Like Sharapova right now still hasn't fixed her serve. So when she loses, we can just almost guarantee it's her serving skill. Okay, because your ball pitch is so high that she's had erratic or inconsistency in that and probably would have had 5 or 6 more Grand Slam titles had she fixed that. Now, the athlete might believe that her skill is, unbelievable. But actual matches and results indicate differently. Mm. So they either have to come to that reality and say, hey, I got to work on this skill, or I'm just going to keep the skill the way it is no matter what and hope that I happen to have good days that's going to help me win tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a huge thing, and I hope a lot of people out there are listening, especially the young athletes. And I know we're going to grow the listenership for tennis now with these next upcoming athletes that are going to be on and now with you. And I really hope they take away from this that they've got to work really hard on these things that aren't necessarily their strengths. Because so often we take what we're good at and we just want to kind of ride with it, because then we get in our comfort zone. And it's so important that you push yourself outside of that comfort zone, because greatness is going to come from getting outside of that realm of comfort and really pushing the limits of every single skill that's, you know, needed for whatever sport you have to achieve greatness. So there's great lessons in that. And if you were to talk a little bit about tracking and functional intelligence, what would your thoughts be on those things?
Well, tracking really is the individual athlete trying to follow a regimen, writing down specific, you know, there's a saying out there, what gets written down gets done.
Yeah.
So athletes randomly go along, and they really, again, they don't chart their matches, they don't chart their daily activities, they don't look at their diet, they don't look at their rest patterns, you know, they don't really look at themselves as a professional business. You know, I can guarantee you in professional sports, in professional basketball, baseball, football, oh my gosh, I mean, if you said baseball in America, they're charting how many hits, the batting average, times at bat. You know, they're just looking at everything. You know, in professional football, they look at the running back, how many yards per carry. Okay, they track that because that would be a key characteristic. You know, so unfortunately, the players don't think like that, because then there's no way you can diagnose what is not allowing me to achieve my goals. What is not allowing me to perform optimally? Maybe I didn't get enough rest. Maybe I'll give you an example. Here's an example. I have a guy, and when I designed this book, I went and I said, I've got to go find the very best people in the industry, the smartest minds, to help me. I'm good at tennis, but I don't know everything. I'm a learner and educator. Okay. I facilitate athletes' performance, but I want to get the best people. So, like when I designed the training regimen for these athletes on the conditioning side, I went to Mark Verstegen, who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, a magazine in the United States, and I had him help me with the designing of the training for the athletes. Like Tiger Woods goes to that guy. A lot of the professional athletes end up going there, okay? Besides, I just used him as an example. But anyway, I wanted the best guys doing that. So I didn't assume, and I do know a lot about training the athlete and conditioning and all that. I do know about movement. But these guys are the specialists in their field. Why not get the best guy? So my dietitian, for example, his name's Dr. Mike Smith. He was 20 years at Johns Hopkins in research and cellular research, okay? And he's a PhD, MD, and his PhD is in biochemistry. And him and his partner are Nobel Prize chemists. So I just can't look at him and go, oh, this guy doesn't know anything. No, he's spent 20 years studying cellular research and the effects on the human body. You got to be kidding me. How can you get better? You can't even argue. Our country can't even argue with, oh, this isn't guy doesn't know anything, you know?
Yeah.
So here's the guy who's helping me with my nutrition plans for my athletes. Why wouldn't I use the best guy? You see, that's, again, you get athletes associated with the very best people. And the byproduct is the chances are that athlete's going to have the best chances of success. For example, let's say most athletes don't understand they have a 10-minute window after playing a match to refuel, drink fluids, eat power bars, eat whatever they have to do to refuel the system, or it takes 48 hours for the cellular recovery. Okay, so in other words, whatever I put into my system after that 10-minute window, the door's shut, it's in my stomach, but it's not going to affect the cells in the body, so that the fuel and glycogen in the muscle groups doesn't cause us to deplete or not perform well because we don't have the energy there. Mm-hmm. So that's a tracking. In other words, I want the athlete to say, yeah, I fueled at this time. I did this. Here's what we did. Okay, result, I had energy for my next match, and my next day I played a three-set match and won. Or I played two matches that day and won both of them. So, that's part of the tracking issue. The athletes have to be able to say, I did this, this, and this. Okay, now, if you track that, you can find out why. You can ask the question, okay, even if the athlete doesn't know, the coach can say, well, these are the things that led up to this. Okay, now, did we do all these things right? Did we check the list off and do this correct? Okay, if we did, then we have to go to why, maybe the charting of the match, the tactical way the person played. Okay, mentally they lost it. Maybe we need the mental side trained a little better. But again, there's a system to understand why the mistake happened. And if you don't track it, you have no idea. No idea.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge people have. Now, again, functional intelligence is a term actually coined by Dr. Neil Whitehouse. This is the hardest thing for athletes. I would say if you were the quarterback and let's say there's a 300-pound guy going to come in on you in the football game, and his job is to break your arm. And you're in the pocket, and you're going, man, this guy, he wants to hurt me. Okay, now, not only that, you got to read the field in front of you and throw this pass accurately so the team achieves distance down the field for the chances to score. That's pressure. That is what the professional athletes like Peyton Manning and these great quarterbacks are paid so highly, because they function under that duress. And that is what the functional environment, or what happens with functional intelligence. And that is hard. That is the hardest skill to train for coaches. And it's trained poorly and usually never. So here's the challenge. If I said to you, okay, the height of a tennis ball, there are two basic primary skills, and there are visual skills that go into the CPU. Okay, player positioning, okay, and ball recognition or player recognition skills. Okay, and those are skills when you see a player in duress. He's stretched out, he barely can reach the ball, and he has to float back a slice backhand and just put it back in play. Okay, well, that is the level of duress that the player sees. Okay, now how can I take advantage of that? Now, the other question is, okay, a ball recognition skill, which is, I understand that this guy's hitting high and heavy to me. How can I manage this ball better? And am I getting the ball deep in the court? Is my shot landing short so that I'm recognizing when to come forward quickly? I'll give you an example. I just had a guy, the 300th ranked guy in the world with me, just recently, okay?
Yeah.
So his biggest challenge, he's played Federer three times, lost three times in a row. Of course, a lot of people lose to Federer three times in a row. okay, but the point is, he played in the same style. And I asked him, I said, well, why would you think that he's going to be afraid backcourt player, a guy is just going to rally him, and then you're trying to hit winners from the back and cause him to make mistakes. I said, that's silly. That's like going in with the same game plan and expecting a different outcome. And
the definition of insanity.
Yeah, absolutely right. And it's silly. I said, look at how many balls you got. I said, you hit great shots. Look at how many balls you got landing inside the service line or in the forecourt, and then you let the ball play you rather than move in early and take the ball and attack it. So that challenge is a ball recognition skill. The player sees that it's short. Maybe their internal body says, hey, I just don't feel comfortable going to net. And then you have to work on a net skill. But again, the opportunity was there to be aggressive and attack. So you wouldn't go, oh, yeah, let's not do that. Let's just play it the same way and hope this guy makes a mistake. Well, hence, he lost three times in a row. You have no chance if you don't change your game style or change the way you attack that specific player. Professional sports teams, the coach looks at game film. Okay, now he prepares his defensive team, and that athlete practice. Those guys practice specifically defend their offense, and then the offensive team plans a specific thing to perform well against their defense. So why wouldn't that be true in tennis? Why wouldn't it? It's offense and defense. The teeter totter changes hands constantly. So I can't see people, again, just going out playing the same style, same way, and expecting a different outcome. Mm-hmm. And then the results change in their favor. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's fantasy.
Yeah, there's
functional. That's what functional intelligence is. It's the ability to function under pressure in the defined environment, making great decisions based on a tactical way to play and the statistical percentages. My athletes, the guys I've trained, all my professional people, I'm the money ball guy. I'm the statistical guy that says, do this under this condition, and this is what you can expect. And then adjust that based on your individual strengths or weaknesses so that you optimize the chances of winning.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I'm the money ball guy.
I love that.
I'm the guy that I don't coach from fantasy.
Yeah. I want to just highlight a couple of things from these two different things that we were just talking about. And just to go back, because, I mean, there is a wealth of information in there for people talking about both functional intelligence and tracking. And so this last part that you're mentioning, I mean, functional intelligence being that you need to really see what's happening. And under stress, you've got to make corrections and adjustments to your game depending on what the other person is doing and based on what you're able to do to prevent them from kind of doing whatever is going to happen. If you just keep doing, like, for instance, what that player was doing, then you're going to get the same outcome. So you've got to be able to change and adapt. And I like that you were talking about all of those things about positioning and these things that you need to be aware of, because I think some players sometimes, they forget that there's so much more that goes into this. And if you really want to take it, and we're talking specifically to players now that want to make it to an elite level, and you want to take this to a level that there's only maybe 10% or less, 2% of the people in the world playing your sport might be at this level. And if you want to do that, you've got to do things differently. You've got to learn how to adjust to different people testing different parts of your game. And so there's a lot there, and I hope people take a lot from that. And I think they can get more information about that. And which one of your books hits more on that?
Well, I designed 5 different books for the more of the industry in this area the country, you know, because I have a management book for professional coaches who want to be directors of tennis. I have a player development book or my management manual. You know, it's that book is really designed for the. It just gives highlights of the. It's not customized. It's just a general format for athletes to understand how they have to look at themselves so that they can at least put something together and then organize their life in a way that's going to give them a good chance to perform.
Yeah.
The other three books are really for the it's what I deal with on a daily basis at club. I have a book called Get a Grip, which shows all the different hand positions on the racket, disadvantages, stance, and contact point, and the players that use that book or use that those type of grips as examples. So that book is really designed for the recreational player at a club who says, hey, I don't know how to hold this. How do I? Who holds it this way? This is the way I like it. So that person can understand that and why they're making mistakes or, you know, why the shot goes out. Like some, you would never teach a beginner probably a continental grip, which is a base knuckle on panel two, and there's eight panels on a racket, and the heel of the hand on panel two. So that grip, a lot of times coaches teach that to a beginner, and they can't even find the face of the racket. So you couldn't do that. Inappropriate for that person.
Yeah.
The other book is called NTRP, which is our rating system in the United States, which the recreational player, again, just like the professional player, doesn't understand how to move from a 2.0 player to a 4.0 player, or a 4.0 player to a 4.5. And they don't really get it, and there's no way of understanding, okay, this is where I'm at. Here's what I need to do to get to where I want to go. If you said to me, okay, Mike, I want to be at Wimbledon next year, and we have a year to play, and your level of play is 2 or 3, I'd say you're in fantasy land. You know, it's like, what? How can you think that? And then you tell me you're only going to practice once a week. That, I mean, the workload doesn't match the goal. It's not reality. You know what I mean? The guy is going to say, it'd be like me saying to you, if I golfed, for example, and I'm a 130, and I want to be a 0 handicap, but I'm only going to play once every 2 months. What? That's just fantasy. So that book is for the recreational player to find out why they can't move to the next level and what skills they're not good at. Okay, and then I have a book called Strings, Tension, and Rackets, and that book is just designed, again,
Hold on, Mike.
Professional. Yeah.
Do me a favor. Is your mic on your cord, or is it on the computer?
On the computer.
Oh, there you go. Whatever you just did, it came through much more clear, so leave it like that.
Okay, sorry. Is that all right?
There you go. It's good. Go ahead. So the last book?
Yeah, the last book's called Strings, Tension, and Rackets, and it's just designed. I'll give you an example. I trained Wesley Whitehouse, who won Junior Wimbledon, and anyway, this guy beat Safin when he was one in the world, and We beat a lot of great players. Okay, his racket was strung at the tournament, okay?
Yeah.
And I picked up the racket, and I was livid. I was livid with the stringer. I said, look, you did this incorrectly. You know, I'm a certified stringer. You know, so I handed it back. The guy said, please do it again. And he strung the racket again, incorrect again, and I went back really upset, and I went to the guy, I told the head guy, I said, look, please, if you can't get it this right, I'll do this myself. I'll string the racket for my player. I need it done properly. I can't. This is his tool. You see, the tool of the trade. I can't have it incorrect. So I went back and I looked at the guy, and he didn't calibrate the stringing machine properly so that the string, even though he marked it at, let's say, 60 pounds, it didn't come out. It came out at, like, you know, 52. Well, you can't do that. You can't make those kind of mistakes going into a professional match, and you're going to play Murat Safin. Why would that be right? The athlete has to be detailed about every little part so that nothing goes wrong. And that is the common thing that happens to the recreational player. And what happens, they get sore shoulders, arms, elbows, you know, it's silly. So I wrote that book for the recreational player and the professional athlete, but again, that's a detail you can't have wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't make that mistake.
And so, I'm going to link all of those up in the show notes so people can check them out. So I'll get the links for you from every single book of of that list that you've got, because I mean, five books, that's a lot, and that's, there's so much, there's a wealth of information that I know that we can learn from you. And if it's okay with you, I'd love to have you on again soon, especially under circumstances. I know we talked about it at my sister's 1-year-old's birthday party here in Serbia while you're in Huntington Beach. I'd much rather be there, but for now, I'd love to be here for my sister. And I want to get into more about this, so if we can, could we do a little bit more soon here?
Yeah, that's fine. We just have to schedule it. Typically on a Sunday is the best day for me.
Perfect. We're going to bring people then a part two, Mike, because there's so many questions that I really want to ask you now, because I love all the things you're talking about. And tennis isn't even my game, but it's just so much that it can resonate with so many athletes across many different sports. So let's just leave people with a couple different ways to get in touch with you, and then we'll say goodbye.
Well, I just, you know, my email, I listed my emails on your information page. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah. I mean, that's one method. You know, the other method is, I'm on Skype as well. You know, so they can always contact me that via email or Skype, or if they have some questions in regards to that, I'll usually answer those, you know, I mean, and then really, you know, I mean, here in HB, I just, you know, I have a cell phone, but I mean, I don't expect people to call from a different country. Just,
well, we'll give them the email, the Skype, I'll link that up, and then what about your LinkedIn? How about that? We'll put that on.
Yeah, for sure. They could contact me via LinkedIn. I'm on the LinkedIn as well. Yeah,
awesome.
Absolutely. So those are three easy ways, you know.
All right. Well,
so yeah, that's not a problem.
Why don't you just leave one takeaway for players for this part one that we can go into part two and start off from?
Okay, well, my takeaway is plan your progress. Don't randomly do it. Plan your progress. It's a game plan of life. It's a game plan of professional standards that you have to live by to have success. You can't randomly do it. I'm just telling you. Design your plan and follow through.
Great stuff. Listen, next time we're going to get into scheduling and periodization, things that you know, or that I know that you definitely want to talk about, and some things that athletes can do just to set themselves up for success from the beginning. So thank you so much for your time, Mike, and I'm definitely going to be in touch soon. And anybody listening to this, feel free to tweet me at Ryan J. Owens or at Beyond Athletic, and I'm going to get everything that you guys say, if you don't reach out to Mike himself, to him. So thanks so much, Mike.
Okay, Ryan. Thanks, Ben.
I'll be in touch. Ciao.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Did you like the show? Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher.com so others will find us. And share the love. Think of one person that could benefit and send them the link for this episode. For more resources and tips, go to beyondathletic.com or tweet us at beyondathletic. I appreciate and thank you for listening.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
I'm gonna show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.